What about the premenopausal patient with ER-positive disease? How do you approach hormonal therapy there?
Well, tamoxifen remains the mainstay of treatment. Certainly in Europe, there is a very strong feeling that the published data, the meta-analysis, and three other studies would seem to indicate that the addition of ovarian ablation to tamoxifen is superior to either of those modalities alone. And in Europe, it's very hard to convince the vast majority of oncologists that that question has not already been answered. However, the fact that we have the SOFT trial and the TEXT trial and the PERCADE trial examining this very question indicates that at least in the minds of most American oncologists, the question remains unanswered as to the best means of therapy in the adjuvant setting for premenopausal patients.
Can you talk about what those trials are looking at specifically? Not so much each one, but just generally which endocrine strategies they're looking at?
Well, I think the SOFT trial is the most representative because it includes everything. It includes the gold standard, which is tamoxifen. It also includes ovarian ablation plus tamoxifen, and it includes ovarian ablation plus an aromatase inhibitor. And I think that that sort of sums up the bottom line of each of those three trials. The other trials may include some chemotherapy. The TEXT trial presupposes that ovarian ablation is important and just randomizes between tamoxifen and an aromatase inhibitor. And so I think the answers are not in and won't be in really for many years. And in the meantime, you know, oncologists are stuck with deciding, do you believe or don't you believe that the addition of ovarian ablation, either surgically or medically, adds to the use of orally given hormonal therapy? And certainly the aromatase inhibitors you cannot really give to a premenopausal patient and expect it to work unless you render them postmenopausal.
In a patient who's going to have ovarian suppression or ablation, you know, perhaps at increased genetic risk or because high risk for recurrence or whatever reason, do you think it's a logical leap to say, well, we've made the woman postmenopausal, we know that aromatase inhibitors result in fewer relapses and less serious toxicity than tamoxifen in postmenopausal women, why don't we just use an AI?
Well, I think that there are some counterpoints to that logic, and one of the counterpoints to that logic is when you render a patient postmenopausal, you're putting their bones at risk, and tamoxifen actually has some degree of bone-sparing effect. And so one could make the point that perhaps even if you give away some degree of efficacy, which hasn't been proven yet in premenopausal women post-ovarian ablation with the use of an aromatase inhibitor, that maybe you would gain it back by improved quality of life. And it's not just really the bones, but also one of the side effects of tamoxifen is actually vaginal discharge. Well, vaginal discharge may actually be vaginal lubrication. And one of the biggest complaints that we have among our premenopausal women and our postmenopausal women is not only decreased libido, but increase in vaginal dryness. And both decreased libido and increased vaginal dryness often play into each other, thereby further impacting negatively on a woman's quality of life.
What about the issue of hormonal therapy in the premenopausal woman who stops menstruating during chemotherapy or after chemotherapy?
Well, that's got to be viewed with considerable caution, especially for those who are following the so-called switching strategy of moving on from tamoxifen to an aromatase inhibitor. The aromatase inhibitors are actually being used by fertility doctors to stimulate ovulation. And we have a large number of women, and Dr. Burstein and Dana-Farber is actually going to publish a paper on this about premenopausal women who had been put on tamoxifen. They had 2 years of amenorrhea secondary to their chemotherapy, and lo and behold, you put them on the aromatase inhibitor and bam, they start menstruating again. And it becomes very difficult in following these women because if they're already on tamoxifen, you can't rely on the LH and FSH because the pituitary gland views tamoxifen as an estrogen because of its estrogen agonist properties. And so the LH and FSH in tamoxifen-treated patients is low. And so then you have to rely on the estradiol level. And the estradiol level is fraught with a lot of methodological problems. And so consequently, when you make the decision to take somebody who is premenopausal, becomes postmenopausal chemotherapeutically, and decide to put them on an aromatase inhibitor, then you must follow them as closely as possible. And we follow our patients like every 3 months with serum estradiol levels, and we monitor verbally how they're doing with their hot flashes. But beyond that, it's just a word of caution. You can't blithely use a switching strategy in that population of patients because you are going to be using an ineffectual aromatase inhibitor in some proportion of those women who may be amenorrheic but are still making substantial amounts of estrogen.
That's interesting about monitoring the hot flashes. So if they have had hot flashes and now they're getting better, then you get a little concerned?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Is that clinical clue actually helpful?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. What about, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, the switching strategy, there's a lot of evidence to support it. In the postmenopausal woman, if you're that concerned about starting menstruation up, why not just give her an LHRH agonist?
You're talking about the perimenopausal woman?
Yeah, the perimenopausal woman who stops menstruating and chemotherapy, but yet she gets tamoxifen. Now she's out at 2 to 3 years. She still hasn't had a period. You're still concerned about the possibility of, if you're going to put her on an AI, starting up with her menstrual periods again, why not just put her on an LHRH agonist?
Well, it's expensive. The patients are going to have to come back for, you know, frequent doctor visits. I'm not particularly happy with the every 3 month preparations. I've heard through the grapevine that maybe the suppression may not last the 3 months. I haven't seen hard data on that, but it leaves me room for concern. So I think that there is no answer to the problem. If you have a firm belief in the switching strategy and you have a chemotherapy-induced amenorrhea patient and you're concerned enough, you can put them on one of the LHRH compounds and switch them to an aromatase inhibitor, and I would still then monitor their estradiol for a while.
This concludes the first CD. For more from the interview with Dr. Vogel, please turn to the second CD.